Hello, students, and welcome to Class of X, the free internet course on how to read and enjoy the X-Men comics better. I'm your teacher and host, John Reisinger, and today, in light of this week's wonderful release of Deadpool and Wolverine, we're going to be going over a bit of a history lesson on the X-Men comics and their alternate timeline team members. If you've been listening to this show at all, I've made it very clear that time travel is one of the main plot points and theme elements of X-Men stories. It's how they've done a lot of their adventures. It's how they have acquired a lot of teammates. It's how they've acquired a lot of villains. We're going to cover mostly just teammates and X-Men characters that have like worked with them for the most part. There's a couple here on my list that are not necessarily teammates, but I'll give a reason why we're going to talk about them. But because it's been made clear that the way that the MCU has decided to integrate the X-Men into their show after, you know, the Disney acquisition of the Fox properties, they're going to be doing it through alternate timelines and alternate realities, which are kind of interchangeable terminology. And since Deadpool and Wolverine involves Deadpool finding a Wolverine from a different reality, and they're going to be going up against the TVA, this felt like a good time to kind of go over some of these characters. Some of this is going to be kind of repeats of what we talked about in previous episodes, but I guarantee you we're going to go over some new stuff that, frankly, before doing research for this show, I didn't even know all the stories about. Wait till we talk about Rachel. Just wait till we talk about Rachel. I realized I hadn't really done a deep dive into Rachel before, and it's weird. But we're going to start off with the easy first start, an actual Deadpool character. I want to, you know, talk about Cable and Strife. We've talked about Cable and Strife a lot in this show, but for those who haven't been paying attention, Cable and Strife are clones of each other. Well, Strife's a clone of Cable. And Cable came onto the scene in Uncanny X-Men 201 as a kid. He's a baby. He's a baby born to Madeline Pryor and Scott Summers. Almost said Cyclops Summers. And that was a concept that was introduced by Chris Claremont at the time, who was writing the X-Men. He was a big part of what was going to be the big Inferno event and the return of Jean Grey and the Phoenix and all that kind of stuff. And so he was introduced into the in 1985 to the X-Men, but then because he had to go to the future because of his infection with a techno-organic virus, he was gone for a while. And then this adult version of Cable, which in Uncanny X-Men 201, he would have just been Nathan. In New Mutants 87, which would have been in about 1990, Louise Simonson, who was writing the X-Men at the time, she kind of crafted this adult persona. But if you listen to how Rob Liefeld describes it, he was kind of given full carte blanche to kind of create this character however he wanted. Rob Liefeld was doing art for the X-Men, but with Cable, according to him, he really just made this character all on his own. And so he was introduced as a new militaristic leader for the New Mutants, and it wasn't until his own solo comic in 1993, 3 years later, in Cable number 6, that he was then finally confirmed to be Cyclops' son, and that he had time travel to thwart Strife, who was his evil clone, and also to find himself in the present day, our present day, in order to halt the rising of Apocalypse, which was the post-apocalyptic wasteland that he came from. His timeline was run by Apocalypse. And so Cable and Strife have been with the X-Men since then. Since 1990, they both have been a big part of the X-Men. So that's like over 30 years now. And it's not the only iteration that actually Cable has been a part of the X-Men. In 2018, they introduced a new version of Cable, which was young Cable. This might be kind of new, weird news to you if you never, have been reading modern comics. But it was part of this event called the Extermination Event. That was kind of like the culmination of Brian Michael Bendis's run with a title called All New X-Men. Now, All New X-Men was a story that was stemmed from kind of the aftermath of the Schism and Avengers versus X-Men. And long story short, since we haven't gone over either of those stories, at this point, Cyclops had changed drastically character-wise. He'd gone from what a lot of people would have considered him to be the Boy Scout leader of the X-Men, and he's now like almost like the fascist version of Cyclops. Kind of like If you watched X-Men 97 and you remember that episode where he's having that interview with Trish Tilby, and then he finally has a moment where he gets like honest and real about how much it sucks to struggle to be a mutant and how much it sucks to like make the humans feel better about being around them, that's a glimpse into what this version of Cyclops was. Well, Beast decided that Cyclops needed a lesson in how far he'd fallen. And so Beast did what Beast does, which is he did scary science. And he went back in time and plucked the five original X-Men, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Angel, Iceman, Beast, and pulled them from like their baby X-Men years into the present, because he thought that if he showed Cyclops what he was when they started, it would change Cyclops's mind. Spoiler alert, it did not work at all to accomplish anything Beast was hoping to accomplish. And in fact, he made an even bigger whoopsie by doing this, because for plot reasons, we'll just call it that, these original X-Men couldn't go back in time. They were stuck in the future. And so they became part of the X-Men like regular roster alongside, in some instances, their own adult selves. This is where we got Iceman coming out of the closet. This is where we got Angel getting these weird celestial fire wings because of a storyline that they went through. And this went on for quite a while. And it was during the extermination event, which was kind of like the final end of this story. And that was written by Ed Brisson. And so young Cable is introduced as somewhat of the antagonist for this crossover event. And he comes into the future because actually kills his older self, because he thinks that his older self has failed and fallen from his original mission and objectives by letting these past X-Men stay in the future. He thought that was so much of a failure that he needed to take over and Cable take the wheel, and he became the main Cable character in the X-Men comics. And he actually started off as kind of a punk. You know, obviously he kills his older self and is a little bit of a scamp, but he finds his place amongst the X-Men. He dates some of the X-Men, including the Cuckoo Sisters. He actually gets Cyclops takes this as an opportunity to finally have a relationship with his son, being younger than a very old man, a man that's older than him. And he hung around for quite a while. He didn't go back until Cable reloaded in 2021, after he figured that his mission was done. And he had already resurrected his old self using the Krakoan resurrection protocols in order to help him defeat. He needed help defeating Strife. And so he completed that and decided to go back to the past and let old Cable take over again. But again, Cable's been around in multiple iterations with the X-Men since the 90s. And he is the poster child of timeline characters. The other character that I wanted to talk about that's another poster child of timeline stuff would be Bishop. Everybody knows Bishop. Bishop has been in the cartoons. Bishop was in X-Men Days of Future Past feature film. And Bishop is a creation of John Byrne and Wills Portacio. John Byrne wrote him into Uncanny X-Men 282 in 1991. And he came from a similar, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, sad future as Cable. But in his future, instead of Apocalypse being in charge, the humans had finally become in charge. And they were using Sentinels to keep camps of these mutants. That's why he has the M on his face. He is branded as a mutant. And Bishop was actually specifically originally a part of a security detail that was kind of they were following in the path of Professor X's, you know, dogma, and he was part of Xavier Security Enforcers. Bishop was, I looked this up and I actually found out like where his inspiration came from of what his look was, and he's actually designed after John Ford's era with kind of like John Wayne character. That's where the the scarf kind of thing around his neck comes from. And Wills also points out that like Prince was going around with Jerry curls at the time. So if you look at original Bishop design, you can kind of see like where he got those vibes. To speak of the timeline where Bishop comes from, he comes from specifically Earth 1191, which is actually a timeline that they revisited. We talked about this during an X Factor timeline, where it was the M Day timeline, where this is the reason why Bishop hunted Hope and Cable through the future, is because to his timeline there was a specific mutant that was the catalyst of how bad his world had become, and that was Hope Summers. So Bishop back in the 90s, he came to our present day because he was chasing Trevor Fitzroy, who's another evil mutant, and he was chasing him to the past to kind of thwart him, who was also like time traveling when he shouldn't have. He also came with kind of a secret message that he learned from the past about the past, about there being a traitor amongst the X-Men. He was told this by a character called the Witness, who looked a lot like Gambit, Remy LeBeau. That's why when Bishop shows up and sees Remy and knows the description of the Witness, he thinks that Gambit's the one who's going to betray the X-Men. And while Gambit did betray the X-Men, specifically the Morlock tunnel massacre called the Mutant Massacre, what Bishop finally found out was who was the traitor was actually going to be Onslaught. Onslaught was basically Professor X went super crazy tried to take over the world and kill every hero on the Marvel Universe. That was Bishop's original mission, and it wouldn't come to fruition until the Onslaught series. Bishop, again, showing up in 1991, has stayed around for forever. Went through a little bit of that dark era during the Messiah Complex hunt for Cable and Hope through the future. But as so many of these characters do after they go through their dark times, he found absolution and found himself amongst the ranks of Krakoa, was a part of the Marauders, and then eventually became one of the military leaders, the captains on Krakoa. That's Bishop. Now we're going to try to tackle Rachel Summers. Rachel is bonkers. A lot of people don't know Rachel because she really hasn't shown up in a lot of the pop culture media as much as some of the other characters. While we've always seen, you know, Rogue and Gambit and Storm, Rachel is mostly been known for her comic book appearances. While she's shown up in like video games and some media, her story has been going on since quite a while. She was introduced in Uncanny X-Men 141, so even before Cable shows up. And she was a Chris Claremont and John Byrne creation. And she was the character that we see in Days of Future Past. She's the one who's able to send old Shadowcat to the past in order to thwart Days of Future Past, which is Earth 811. And then in New Mutants 18, like a couple years later, she shows up at, in our present time, in Earth 616, and kind of joins up with Xavier at the school. And it's not until Uncanny X-Men 192 with a flashback that we learn why she's here. She was in the Days of Future Past timeline on a mission with Shadowcat. They were trying to stop the Nimrod robot from being created. And Kitty knew that it was a suicide mission. And so she used these kinds of like trigger words, saying the words Dark Phoenix, to send Rachel back into Earth 616 timeline using the power of the Phoenix. And so that's how Rachel finds her way to our, you know, normal X-Men. I keep saying normal. It's Earth 616 X-Men. She hangs around for quite a while and does a lot of adventures for like over a decade, and joins up eventually with Excalibur and is doing stuff with Captain Britain and Nightcrawler and Kitty with them. And it's actually in an Excalibur story where Captain Britain is lost in the time stream, that after seeing Scott and Jean finally have their wedding, which is her seeing her parents finally get married which might actually mean she could be born in this timeline. She decides it's the happiest moment of her life, and she needs to sacrifice herself to go get Captain Britain and bring him back to their time. And so she seemingly does that, but what actually happens is that she gets actually sent, Captain Britain gets returned, but she gets sent 2,000 years into the future into the Apocalypse and Cable timeline. And this is where we get the clan, the Mother Ascani clan, that actually raises Cable. They're actually the ones, it's all time paradox stuff, because they're the ones that eventually are able to send someone back in time to when the baby Cable, the baby Nathan, gets infected with the techno-organic virus. And they're the ones who go back and go, we can save this little boy. And they're the ones who bring him into the future. That's Rachel. Rachel is Mother Ascani. They are one and the same. And she's the one who kind of like is the reason why Cable is actually around. So they have a really close bond with each other. I'm going to leap forward a lot. She actually dies in a final fight with Strife in the Apocalypse timeline. And during the X-Men storyline called The 12, without having to give too many details on the how, basically they are able to finally thwart Apocalypse from gaining the power he would need in order to take over the world in Earth 616 timeline. And then this ultimately negates her timeline, meaning that she and her timeline no longer exists. Again, it seems like Rachel is gone for forever because that timeline has been thwarted. Not so. She was actually thrown, her persona, which has been considered, I think it was called out, like some sort of like time paradox, where she's the only Rachel in all of time. That like how everybody else has like different versions of themselves and alternate realities, there's like only one Rachel. She was actually thrown into the future towards the end of time, and she was held by this prisoner that was being held as like in a prison at the end of time named Gaunt. She eventually is able to call Cable through time and their like psychic connection to come save her. And he does save her and bring her back to Earth. And she does make her way back to Earth 616 time. But she keeps her like her presence secret for a little while, which doesn't work out for her well, because she goes through some really bad times. You know, this is when she becomes a slave to a guy named Bogan. And again, I'm going to say this a lot during this episode, but long story short, in Extreme X-Men number 44, she's freed, and this is when she's able to join fully back up with the X-Men, and that's where she's been this entire time, all the way until the most recent present comics, where her and Betsy Braddock were finally able to come out of the closet, and they are girlfriends now, which is lovely. Rachel's one of my favorite characters. She's a character that has gone through a lot of names. She's gone just by Rachel. She's gone by Phoenix. She's gone by Ascani. She's gone by Prestige. She's gone by Marvel Girl. None of them have really stuck. And I think she's just one of those characters that we will always like refer to her as Rachel quite a lot. I'm sure I didn't even do full justice as to the wonky timeline that is Rachel's inclusion into the X-Men 616 universe, but I felt the need to at least make an attempt at explaining who this was, because I feel like we keep talking about her a lot, because she's a very popular and often used character in the X-Men comics, and I felt it was time to finally, do my homework, as I do with this show. Let's talk about Age of Apocalypse for a little bit, because Age of Apocalypse, we're talking a lot about Days of Future Past timeline and Cable's timeline as being a source of a lot of time traveling members of the X-Men. But the other timeline that was so popular that they just had to bring over a lot of the characters was Age of Apocalypse, which was one of the earliest episodes we did of this podcast. I highly recommend you go listen to it. That's Earth 295 for those who are taking notes. And the story was written by Scott Lobdell, and the original X-Men Alpha, which was the beginning special issue that launched the crossover event. The art was done by Joe Majewera. The first character from the Age of Apocalypse universe that I feel is necessary to talk about is Blink. Blink, who has actually shown up in a few bits of pop culture media, including Days of Future Past. In comics, her first appearance was actually technically Uncanny X-Men 317, but that was Earth 616 Blink, which is the less known and less popular version of Blink. That's the version of Blink that actually eventually becomes part of the Krakoan nation, but that was the one that was premiered in 1994. She lasts only for a couple of issues and actually dies in the Phalanx Covenant storyline, which was the origin of Generation X, which was like the teen X-Men team with Jubilee and a bunch of other mutants led by Banshee and Emma Frost. So she really premiered in an X-Men Alpha number one, which was also in 1994. And she, you know, like I said, she was so popular, you know, for the Age of Apocalypse that they actually, after Age of Apocalypse, they gave her a four-issue miniseries that was a self-titled one. It was the Blink in miniseries. And then this led into Exiles. Exiles is where she found her main notoriety. A little fun fact before we get into, like, we talk about Exiles stuff, which I only talk a little bit about it because it's mostly I'll just say, like, you should go read Exiles, which we've done an episode on Exiles, was that the Earth 616 Blink actually does make an appearance in the Hercules comics. You know, she's stuck in, after she dies in the Phalanx Covenant, apparently, I read this through, she ends up in Erebus, which is like the shadow hellish realm, and she's freed from there and kind of resurrected by Selene, who is one of the like immortal mutants, and this is part of the story Necrotia, which is definitely a story I want to do an episode on because I love Necrotia. It's so over the top and fun. It's kind of like Marvel's Blackest Night story if you're a DC Comics fan and read Green Lantern. And then after Necrotia, during the Schism event, she does actually eventually join Wolverine's version of the Xavier School, which I think he called his school like the Jean Grey School of Learning, despite the fact that actually Cyclops tries to recruit her for his side. If you haven't figured this out, Schism was a story where Cyclops thought he was right, Wolverine thought he was right, and they finally split the X-Men up. Wolverine goes and takes over the school and dedicates it to Jean Grey's name, who's dead at the time, and Cyclops goes and creates a mutant teen army, as you do. She does make an appearance in the Marvel crossover event Secret Empire, but finally, like I said, is on Krakoa and shows up in Sword and Way of X. But the Exiles Blink, she's hung around in Exiles for quite a while. Exiles has gone through a few volumes. The original volume one is the most popular and the actual good one. But Blink, for being a character that came from an alternate reality and never actually really became a part of the main 616 X-Men, I felt like she was still necessary to talk about because Exiles went on for forever, like 100 issues, not to mention the subsequent following volumes. And she became kind of this leader character, with her traveling powers that she has. She's a transporter. And I know I've said this multiple times, but she's worth checking out in Exiles. It's a really fun reality hopping comic. But what's not fun is the next character I want to talk about. This is going to be the only villain, technically, that I'm going to talk about in this episode. I want to talk about Dark Beast, which I love that he's called Dark Beast. He doesn't have a clever, different name. He doesn't have something that makes him stand out. He is just literally a darker colored version of Beast. He's kind of like a little more desaturated, a little bit darker, and he's just called Dark Beast, and he is Evil Beast. Before Beast became evil in the current 616 universe, which he was for quite a while during the Krakoan era, this was Dark Beast, and he was Earth 295 Beast, also premiered in X-Men Alpha 1. And when the Age of Apocalypse timeline ended, which was a whole M-Kron crystal event, which if you watch the X-Men Fox cartoon from the 90s, you know what that thing is. He manages to teleport himself inside the M-Kron crystal, which is a nexus of realities. And by doing that, he's able to avoid the destruction of AOA and sends himself to the past, our past, 616 past. He kind of shows up there, is a little bit amnesiac. He's actually in the past, and is like amnesiac, and a young Emma Frost is able to restore his memories. This is when he then goes off and starts experimenting again, which is what he loves to do. He loves to experiment on mutants. He's very much Mr. Sinister, another kind of Mr. Sinister in that sense, but somehow even crazier. He's really like the crazy scientist, and he starts experimenting on the Morlocks. In fact, at one point he also saves X-Man from an assassination attempt. But this is where it gets interesting, and the reason why I want to talk about him. He actually was part of the X-Men, but they didn't know it for quite a while. It was an X-Men Unlimited 10, where he decides that he needs to hide from Mr. Sinister. And in order to do that, the best place to hide from Mr. Sinister would be on the actual X-Men team. He defeats the real Beast, genetically alters his fur to mimic that Beast's look, and takes his place to hide. And he's there for quite a while. This is during the time when, like, Wolverine had bone claws and was getting really feral. This is during the time where Sabretooth almost kills Psylocke while she's dating Angel. So this is during that era. And he stays around there all the way until the Onslaught story, which is when he decides to play his cards and he joins Onslaught and his whole rigmarole. But it's actually Mystique and Sabretooth who are able to defeat him by finding the real Beast, and everybody, you know, the heroes win the day, and Dark Beast is defeated. He then finds his way. He shows up again later on Genosha. He shows up a few times, but I'm glossing over a lot of the lesser known or the less important plot points with him. But he shows up in Genosha, and this is after everything is dead from like the M-Day, or everything is dead from the new X-Men story with Cassandra Nova. But this is right before the M-Day. And he actually survives M-Day. He's one of the few mutants who still has powers. He also is a big part of the Dark Reign Marvel series, which is this era where Norman Osborn has been able to kind of like almost fully take over the American government, and the villains are almost in charge. People don't think Norman Osborn's a villain, but he actually is, and he creates the Dark X-Men, which are led by Mystique, and he gathers like Beast to be his Beast. We're gonna go super fast forward from Dark Reign to where we've last left off with Dark Beast. Dark Beast actually did get killed, seemingly, during a fight with Magic, who used her portals to decapitate him, which is just super cool. But it turns out he actually was kept alive because in Immortal X-Men number 9, he's like a floating head in a jar, being kept alive by Mr. Sinister. So don't know where he is now in a post-Krakoan world, but the last we saw him, he was a floating head in a jar. Another character from the Age of Apocalypse storyline that's worth talking about was actually their version of Nightcrawler, which a lot of people have kind of nicknamed Darkholm. His name is Kurt Darkholm, which is his mother's last name, Raven Darkholm. And he shows up also in X-Men Alpha. But in X-Force, during a story in the X-Force where X-Force goes to Earth 295 to get this thing called a life seed in order to defeat a overpowered version of Archangel who is becoming the next Apocalypse, this is where they find Darkholm, and Darkholm leaves with them. And he's in Earth 616, and he uses his time in Earth 616 to kind of vow to hunt down the other criminal refugees from the Age of Apocalypse timeline. This would include Dark Beast and another guy named Sugarman, but also Iceman, who had gone evil when he had been like in the Age of Apocalypse. He basically got like shattered and destroyed, but when he reconstituted himself, he had lost all of his like empathy and emotions and became cold and murderous, and so Nightcrawler wanted to hunt him down as well. He also then like eventually kind of joined X-Force as a legitimate member for quite a while, and he hung around until the extermination event, which we talked about, and he died at the end of it, sealing off Age of Apocalypse timeline forever. The other person from AOA that's worth mentioning is obviously X-Man, who is Nate Gray. X-Man actually appeared in his self-titled comic, X-Man number one, in 1995, and he was created by Jeff Loeb and Steve Scroach. And he is a clone that was created by that version of Sinister, the Age of Apocalypse Sinister, as like, I guess you could call it Age of Apocalypse's Cable, because that Cable had never been made, because Scott never, you know, found Madeline Pryor or Jean Grey, and they never married and had a baby. But Sinister created a clone of the genes of Scott and Jean in order to defeat Apocalypse. He was, as always, Sinister works for Apocalypse but wants to overthrow him. But this version of Cable didn't have the history of our Cable we know, and also did not have the techno-organic virus. He had all the powers but none of the problems. He escapes Mr. Sinister and is raised by their version of Forge. He's the one that at the end of the Age of the Apocalypse timeline or story, he's the one who pushes the Amkron crystal into, Apocalypse's son, Holocaust. And that sends them both to Earth 616. And that's how he finds his way into our timeline. While he's there, he has a lot of adventures and weird, confusing times. He manages with his like superpowers to resurrect Madeline Pryor, who was dead at the time, because he was like looking for his quote unquote mother, even though Maddie really isn't his mother, but you know, things are weird. He does the hero thing for a while, and then on a trip to actually another alternate reality, Earth 998, this is when this whole time he's kind of been like young and not very good with his powers, but at this point he fully gains control over all of his powers and becomes very godlike and basically plays God for a while. He eventually sacrifices himself to defeat this big, you know, super, you know, universe baddie called the Harvester, and it's wild. He defeats this guy by spreading, like kind of merging and spreading both of their cells among all living things. He later on is resurrected in Dark Reign, and he does fight Norman Osborn's Dark X-Men. He shows up there. And long story short, after this resurrection and the fight with Dark Reign, he does, after Avengers versus X-Men, he gets full powered again from a life seed, which is that thing that I was talking about that the X-Force went to the Age of Apocalypse timeline to get. And he kind of takes a page out of Apocalypse's book, but he thinks he's doing it for good. And he creates the Horsemen of Salvation, you know, as Apocalypse had the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And he tries to remake the world in his own image. And this is where we get Age of X-Man. Which is a story I would love to do an episode on as well. It's an alternate reality story where he tries to make a perfect version of, like a perfect pocket reality of Earth. That whole story ends with him releasing everyone, but he kind of goes off on his own and decides to try again to make a perfect world, but on his own without like taking over any other realities. And he does that with his version of Magneto that he created. X-Man, I guess you could call him probably the most popular character to come out of the Age of Apocalypse timeline. He's really interesting, and I really do hope that he shows up in X-Men, like pop culture media at some point, whether the movies or the comics. I got a few more that I want to go through. There's Nocturne, who is from Earth 2182. This is a character from Exiles. It's one of the only characters from Exiles who actually finds their way for quite a while in Earth 616. She's the daughter of a alternate reality Nightcrawler and Scarlet Witch, and she grew up with their version of the X-Men, with the heroes. She's got a lot of different superpowers on top of like the teleportation and look of her father. She's a low-level telepath. She can do body possession. She has these things that she calls hex bolts that are named after her mother's like manifestation of her power, but they're actually her sending like these little pocket explosions of like the sulfuric dimension that her and her father teleport through. She joins the Exiles and is on one of their adventures, is left on Earth 616. And this is where she actually gets picked up by Exodus. And he's trying to recruit her, and she decides to join him, but only to infiltrate his version of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. After she kind of gets discovered and has to leave the Brotherhood because they realize that she's not who she says she is, she finds her way through a black hole to the Mojoverse, Eventually during M-Day, Nocturne had a version of herself in M-Day. Afterwards was then recruited, like survived M-Day, and was recruited to New Excalibur, which was a title in 2005. As a reminder, M-Day is the Scarlet Witch No More Mutants event. She eventually, after New Excalibur, is in that team for a while, joins back up with Blink and the Exiles, and that's the last we saw her was with them. Her and Blink, she was one of the main Exiles characters that really didn't leave very much and was a mainstay of that story title. We already went over the original X-Men, so I'm not going to go over them too much. I would love to just cover them in general with an episode, but the last person I want to go over was Old Man Logan, because we've talked about Old Man Logan because we've read the Mark Millar story. But the Old Man Logan that actually made his way to Earth 616 is not the same one. He's almost the same one, which is very confusing. The one that makes its way to Earth 616 is technically from Earth 21923. To describe him, it's kind of like Mark Millar came up with a great idea for an alternate Wolverine. And then when Earth 616 Wolverine died in the storyline, The Death of Wolverine, and then Secret Wars happened, where Dr. Doom gets all powerful and godlike and creates a alternate reality called Battle World. This was a giant multiverse crossover event by Jonathan Hickman. That's where we meet this Old Man Logan. Because the Millar one was, I think, technically from Earth 807128. Both have like similar backgrounds. The other one, after Mark Millar, I don't know if we've talked about it, but he actually shows up in Earth 616. I forgot he does. He shows up because at the end of Old Man Logan, he steals the Hulk baby and he raises Banner Jr. And he finds his way into the Fantastic Four comics eventually. But the one I want to talk about that actually like was a part of the X-Men, he's actually even older than our Logan. I think he was like born in like 1812, and our Logan's like 1880 or something like that. This one's older. He talks about how he actually raised Laura Kinney, so he's got a different backstory. But he also, just like the one from the Millar story, he killed all the X-Men because of an illusion, and he mostly mirrors the same plot points of the Old Man Logan comic. Like I said, after Battle World, he's left over in Earth 616, and he kind of makes a hit list to prevent his world from happening again, a little bit like what Darkholm did with Age of Apocalypse. A lot of these characters, they travel time and decide they need to do whatever they can to make sure their timeline doesn't happen, a la Cable, a la Bishop. He eventually joins the X-Men officially, and he's part of this title called Extraordinary X-Men for quite a while. Long story short, he stays around for almost 5 years in the comics and then dies in a story called Dead Man Logan in 2019. And he did not show up in the Krakoan era. Jeez Louise, that's a lot of information. I feel like I just rattled on for 40 minutes talking about alternate reality X-Men and all that kind of stuff. But I felt like this is a resource, piece of material for anyone to reference to be like, what are all the characters that have been traveling around different timelines but became like mainstay, members of Earth 616 X-Men? Well, here you go. I gave it to you. I'm recording this before Deadpool and Wolverine premieres, so I'm hoping that this is a lead up to a really good movie that is a lead up to a really cool inclusion of the X-Men into the MCU. But either way, hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you enjoy whatever comics you're reading right now. Be good, be kind, be brave, and I'll see you next time.